Blog Talk Radio.
The glowing red in a bed of coals, the poet is born. Our story is riddled with challenges and changes, like blows from a blacksmith's hammer, bent and chiseled into shape. If only forging a poet were that easy. Emotional development, relationship, experience, environment, genetics, all take a hand in molding the immature adults we may be today. Welcome to Double Helix, where we examine the X's and Y's on a show celebrating the human experience, where your true colors are what ties the room together. So get comfortable, because what you're about to hear is poetry we are made of. This is Double Helix on Late Night Poets, and we are a group on allpoetry.com. You don't have to be in the group to participate, but it's more fun if you are, because you can follow along in the chat and participate reading along with us. So I expect my co-host Dexter will be here shortly, but for now, it's just me, and we're going to get into some poems from a contest that I had. Now, the first prompt for this, because tonight is about shifting seasons, is autumn shows us how beautiful it is to let things go. And that's a quote from unknown. We're not sure who said it originally. And I'm going to start with a poem by Patty Mike. So if you're on All Poetry, I post the links so you can read along with me. September Wind by Patty Mike. September wind, bleeding crimson, coating leaves from summer green. Humidity and heat fades in the season of past. For pre-winter breezes, Persephone packs her bags as she leaves her mother and spends the months with her husband Hades. Until that time arrives, enjoy these moments when the trees release their seeds in bittersweet celebration. Many a sailing and dew are shed. The leaves take to September wind. We watch as they take their flight and soar free and so high. Now be like the sprig flower in bloom and watch out for that. And yep, still too soon. End poem. So I think this is a beautiful poem. I like that it describes the mythology of it, with Persephone going to the underworld, like in the Greek myths, because there's that agreement where she's going to spend part of the year with Hades, who she was tricked into marrying, and Demeter, her mother, is in charge of harvest and growth and, you know, makes our crops grow, but she goes into mourning during the time that Persephone is gone. So everything goes cold and stops growing for a little while. And this last celebration before Persephone goes is like her goodbye party, where we have the beautiful leaves, but also it's sad. I really liked how he said, many a sailing and dew are shed, because there's that crying as she parts. I think that's so beautiful, to bring that myth back and connect it to our contemporary experience of fall. Very nice, Patty Mike. Now, I'm going to go to a poem by Eva Pilhazy. The Arcanum of September by Eva Pilhazy. Swimming through bottle green water, I hopelessly try to dream myself back into the summer. Meanwhile, September weaves watery, welkin veils into the skies, and teeth chattering ripples cool down my arm strokes. From under the lakeside oaks, an empty bench observes my floating when sweeping off the abandoned bath pier, the western winds wear long-sleeve sweater. And time opens its wary window wing above the zenith as I'm heading to the shore. Sun ray peeks through among grayish haze cushions, laying their white gold bridge towards the arcanum of passing, and splashing the shallow water on my way outward. With slow motions, I wade through the mystery of letting go. End poem. Oh, I really like the way this is formatted as well. So she switches from left align to right align in between stanzas. So it creates an interesting visual effect when you're reading it. There's some nice alliteration, weaves, watery, welkin, and teeth chattering is one of those words that you can't help but actually hear those teeth chattering. I think because of the way chattering actually can sound like chattering. It's one of those like onomatopoeia words where you can hear the thing it's describing in the word if you say it a certain way. Chattering, you bang your teeth together. And it's just a beautiful way of describing it. I know around here, because I live near several lakes, watching how people interact on the lakes tells you what season it is. You can tell by what time people use it, by how many people are out on the lake, what it's like. It's usually not the problem of it being too cold. It's generally people wait until it's a little bit cooler because in the middle of the day it's a little too much. But you can tell by interactions with lakes pretty much anywhere what season it is, if it's a place where seasons adapt. Very nice poem. So now I'm going to read one by Stephen T. Wellman. Soft Landings by Stephen T. Wellman. And so we prepare another cold winter, like the cold dewdrops running down my chiseled cheeks, summer's first hue, fast fading fray. A cold chill in the air thaws the ice in my chest, reminds a rugged stone, a season of poetry recites, ethereal expressions ensue. Colors of the wind paint brush the lamenting landscape. Beauty besets my tired eyes. September, foreplay shimmers, goldenrod glimmers, all an evaporating enigma. My equinox heart hiccups, briefly walks a tightrope, equally balancing day and night, a brief moment of grace. Shadows soon grow shorter. Shifting silhouettes shake hands. A myriad of watercolors flutter. Carpet flaming forests. A passionate fire burns brightly. Nature's orchestra gathers a somber symphony ensemble. Rough drafts bleed seasonal stirrings. Magnificent, majestic moments. Tempered time trembles, free-falling, fickle colors let go, dance divinely on brisk breezes, looking for soft places to land in the world gone mad. End poem. Oh, I thought this was beautiful. Really nice, Stephen. It had such vivid images, and it really, like, pulls at how our art can be influenced by what's going on outside, a season of poetry. And, you know, I think it truly is. I liked when he described September as foreshadowing, because it does, it hints at what's coming, because generally October and November are the full-fledged leaf coloring differences and the season change is more drastic. But September gives you that hint of what's to come. There's that cool breeze and it's starting to feel like fall. So I think that's a beautiful way to put it. Summer's first hue, fading fray. Just beautifully worded. Okay. So, I am going to read one of my poems called Pumpkin Heart. Pumpkin Heart. Fall showcases the beauty of mortality. Death, a season, only highlights vitality. Contrasts awake forgotten appreciation. Fleeting nature prevents procrastination. The colors of autumn I cherish. Leaves reach zenith as they perish. Pumpkin patches spark my spirit. Feel energized just to be near it. Autumn breeze like phoenix fire. Exquisite season bound to inspire. Now, obviously, I'm not going to comment on my own poems. So I'm going to go on to the next one. Now, the second prompt is, autumn is a second spring when every leaf is a flower, by Albert Camus. The next few poems are to that prompt. And here we go. I love the fall and all it brings, by M.J. Donnelly. Oh, wait a minute. I'm sorry. This is actually to a later prompt, so I'm going to come back to this one. Okay. Here we go. Okay. It seems like everybody who wrote prompt 2 actually did it to prompt 4. So I'm going to go with prompt 4 for now. I love the autumn, that melancholy season that suits memories so well, which is a quote by Gustave Flaubert. And the next few poems are to that. The Most Amazing Scene, Autumn, by Dammit Dave. Some say that fall's melancholy season, but I've never felt that way at all. It's not too hot, and it is not yet freezing. The multicolored leaves serve to enthrall. Fall marks an end to humid, scorching summer. I welcome nippy nights and cooler days. Though winter's round the bend, and that's a bummer, the autumn hues all set the world ablaze. Too many feel that fall's a time of dying, but it's a hibernation kind of thing. There is no need for further edifying, for the earth will come alive again in spring. Please join me in a harvest celebration as we approach another Halloween. We shouldn't look at autumn as stagnation. To me, it is the most amazing scene and poem. I have to agree with you, Dammit Dave. I think it's absolutely beautiful. I love the multicolored leaves. I'm not a big fan of the humid, scorching summer, so I am perfectly all right with those nippy nights and cooler days as well. I like that you use the word hibernating instead of dying, because, you know, it's just like those bears who feast before going for a night's sleep and wake up ready for spring. Now, the leaves on the trees are like that last feast for our eyes and for the trees, as they look absolutely gorgeous in that late night party before the nap. And will come back to us in spring feeling refreshed after having slept through the winter. So I like the way that that was put. Very nice. Okay, let's see here. I Love the Fall and All It Brings, by M.J. Donnelly. I love the fall and all it brings, when autumn plucks its solemn strings, when vortices of leaves all dance, as kids in worsted wool all prance. Along the shaded paths we stroll, just breathing deep's our only goal. Some simply sit in peaceful trance, as kids in worsted wool all prance. Diving into the crisp leaf piles, there are but screams and beaming smiles amongst bare trees in shivered stance, as kids in worsted wool all prance. I love the fall and all it brings, as kids in worsted wool all prance. End poem. Well, that had a lovely rhythm to it. I really liked the way that sounded. Now, I also really like how everything is all bundled up. My husband has a lot of, like, beautiful wool clothing from some historical reenactment things, and it's always too hot to wear it in the spring and summer, but I love when it comes out in the fall. It's so comfy and nice. And the diving into leaf piles when you're a little kid, classic. One of my favorite childhood pictures that my mom has on her wall is me and my brother popping out of a pile of leaves where we were hiding when we were quite young. I think I was probably about 5 and he was 2. And it's just the joy on our faces as we're in that pile of leaves. It's one of my favorite pictures ever. Worsted wool, I have to admit, I wasn't familiar with the worsted part. So I looked it up, and it's a medium-weight yarn that sits in the middle yarn weight family. It's thicker than sock, general kind of wool, and it's good for sweaters, hats, mitts, blankets. So I'm sure I used worsted wool. I just didn't think to call it worsted. And it has a nice alliteration feel, worsted wool. So I like that detail that was put in. It really helped with the rhythm, the way that worsted wool sounds, the repetition of it was a nice touch. Okay. Now we have A Song of Wild Ducks by Blue Leader. There is something of autumn, as abrupt as it is momentous. Wild ducks in hurried flight. For all the motion, there is a growing stillness, a forlorn waning of the sun. Only the air is alive, and only as it must. The nights grow dark and deep, more so than at other times, and as ever, Lazarus, we die and await the resurrection. End poem. I really like that second line, as abrupt as it is momentous, because depending on where you are, fall can be quite abrupt. It can be like it's summer and then all of a sudden there's like bright leaves and it all falls down, and like a couple days later it's winter. I'm fortunate that I've lived in a few places where fall lasts a few months because it's my favorite. But in some places it's true, it's abrupt. All of a sudden there are no leaves on the trees. It's cold. So it really depends on where you are. Only the air is alive. So this kind of makes me think of somewhere further north where everything dies quite quickly. And the air does feel really alive when it's cold. I find it quite invigorating. So I like the choice of saying that air is alive. And then there's kind of that biblical reference at the end too, and awaiting the resurrection of, you know, the season of earth as it comes back to life in the spring. And generally, Easter tends to be at a time when it's just starting to bloom. So that connects those two as well. Okay. I'm just going to take a quick second to send Dexter a message, make sure he realizes what time it is, and then I will continue with the next poem. Okay, so this next poem is called Atenam Creek, Late September by Swan Song. I let my feet get wet in the slow currents of a small mountain stream. The air is cool and the bodies of tumbled leaves lie strewn on round rocks that are held by snags that have fallen into the creek. The larch stands in the golden yellow of their dying as a few needles fall away, and when a small breeze rustles, the lemon-colored leaves of cottonwoods tumble down and are taken in the trickling rapids. Slowly, I slog upstream in a trance, balancing on my tripod, camera swaying gently back and forth across my body, making my way over the slick creek stones. A ragged butterfly perches on a rock. The tattered appendages show the wear and tear of time. Wings open and close, and colored scales have begun to flake off the wings. The call of an elk in a nearby meadow breaks the heavy silence in the air. I plant the tripod and balance the camera as the body of an old steelhead tumbles with heavy bruised body and blank stare in its wide open eyes. End poem. Wow, this really brings nature to life. Some beautiful nature imagery. And I mean, it's definitely cold to be getting your feet wet in the fall, but there's something really magical about dipping your feet in a stream and feeling it kind of wash over you. This just creates such a beautiful scene that I want to see, and I feel like I sort of do in reading it, the colors and the way that everything is together. The word choice of slog, you see, going slowly with your wet pants as you go, and the weight of the camera kind of pulling against you, and the animals are not in great shape, and yet are beautiful even in their death. In their deterioration. It's just a beautiful description of how fall can feel in nature. Beautiful swan song. Yeah. Go back a little bit. Here we are. Oh, September, by James Spiva. Oh, September, please do not hurry. The sun is dimmer since you came. The rain is thinking not to worry, and spring will never seem so lame. Oh, September, where are the flowers blooming now, going to go? When comes the frost in later hours, and cold lingers in afterglow? Oh, September, don't be so dim. The mowing about which I complain is but the quintessence of a whim that I never intend to ascertain. The end of summer is on my brow. September makes it even older. Old summer is so sad somehow, and yet autumn is growing bolder. End poem. I like in that ending where it talks about old summer is sad. So, like, the very end of summer, that end of August, you know, when you have that, oh, it's time to go back to school and do things, you have that kind of, like, begrudging end of summer where you're not quite done your vacation ambition and all the things you intended to do in the summer. But then when autumn is getting bolder, there's that excitement of being in the next season. So September isn't necessarily the so much the end of things. It is the beginning of a new section of the year. It has that hope. I really like that word choice there. As much as I butchered the pronunciation of quintessence, it's also a cool word choice. This is some beautiful phrasing. Here's a poem by Daniel Deschino. The Sleep of a Clear Conscience by Daniel Deschino. All things deserve rest. Photons crash, burn, ignite the sun. Lighthouse, beacon for the cosmic traveler, whose home is just an abstraction, and when work is done, photons rest, escape, travel the cool calm of space as a businesswoman on a cross-country flight who sleeps to awake when home arrives. And autumn brings respite to the very weary world of green. Laborers of springtime toil, pollination for the world renewal, resuscitation for life of color, and revitalization for all that breathe. For summer sacrifice, of shade to protect, of heat to reflect, to grow and connect. And the autumn winds call the early dusk, and the trees relax from the gathering green. With the colors of truth call for sleep, with dreams of snowy blankets and cool, calming breath. And leaves fall as a gift, as a plan to renew what was taken, to refresh once awaken. And the slumbering photons, the time travelers, the sailors on the currents of space gently kiss the springtime trees to blossom, announce, and smile. And each morning I awaken to a sunrise, and each day I breathe the air. End poem. Another beautiful poem bringing in the nature of all the seasons, really. Down from the, you know, microscopic photons crashing and burning, and then thinking about, you know, space and how on a larger scale things work. I really liked the line, and autumn brings respite to the weary world of green. You know, all of those, I was going to say creatures, but not so much creatures as plants that, you know, work over the spring and summer to provide us with that, the shade, like he points out, the food, all of those things. Plants have to produce, and there are workers during the spring and summer. But now in the fall, they get to have their retirement or their vacation and rest in order to do that all over again next year. So I've never really thought of it as a respite for the world of green, but it truly is. So that's clever to point that out. And leaves fall as a gift, as a plan. I like that. You know, people are so concerned with raking up their lawns so it doesn't look messy, but leaves fall on the ground as part of what nourishes the soil to bring new life next year. We need that. You don't have to buy compost if you use your natural compost. So I kind of like that of the leaves fall as a gift of their beauty and color, but also a gift to our gardens, to the ground. That's a natural circle of life with trees. Well done, as always, Daniel. And here we go. Load up the next one. So this one is by Fill My Eyes, who is the owner of our radio station. Fill My Eyes. Autumn wakes. Autumn wakes under a blanket of frost. Tendrils of auburn, brown, yellow, and red fall about her shoulders as sun rises. Golden rays spreading slowly across the horizon, melting the cold as her smile shines brightly on a new day. She stands tall amid the trees, feeling the crisp, cool air caress her gently, cloaked only in the memory of summer's warmth. A blanket of leaves lays at her feet, a reminder of summer's passing. Swaying quietly in the breeze as she celebrates this very moment in time, her arms raised high, reaching for the warmth of the risen sun, knowing that the cold, bitter hands of winter will soon be upon her. End poem. Oh, that was a beautiful poem, Phil. I like how you personify this tree as sort of the spirit of autumn. And there's that blanket of frost. I remember going to school and waiting for the bus outside. My hair, if it was damp, because I'm terrible for not drying my hair after I shower, would freeze into these little, like, icicle tendrils, and I have curly hair, so it would be like a twist, a tendril of frost, but the idea that the branch has that and those remaining tree leaves up there, and then the way that she describes it, it sounds like a beautiful woman, the tree standing tall, the crisp cool air caresses her. There's a sensuality to that feel, and cloaked only in the memory of summer's warmth. So she's now naked with the comfort of summer's leaves at her feet. And they remind her of you know, that earlier time in her life. And she sways, dances, and her arms raised high. And there's something about someone raising their arms high. You picture them kind of like twirling in a meadow. There's like this kind of triumphant, joyful thing about raising your arms high in the sky. And this tree, despite coming to the end of its cycle, letting go of its leaves, is still there in joy and rising high. I thought this was a really uplifting description in the way that it personified autumn. Beautiful. All right. Here we are. Flourish inside like the tree outside by Senseless Beauty 16. One autumn morning, dark hair flutters as bursts of memories flood a girl's mind. Some scenes move unbearably slow, while other ones rush by quite fast. Under the layers of scandalous clothes and dainty yet playful makeup, the young girl tried to mentally escape only from midnight to early sunrise. She cared about nothing in the present. When dancing with strangers to music, she also stopped stressing about her love life or worrying about her list of weak friendships. But later on, she recognized that choosing ignorance resulted in nothing but a temporary bliss fix. Her fleeting bliss withered up like dead leaves. Finding true love at the dance bar was futile, and fake friendships were bound to shatter. She grew tired of restarting over and over again. However, even at her worst moments in life, the resilient oak trees were always along her path. They gave her comfort when she was lost. Their deep oak scents freshly respired her, and rustling of falling leaves relaxed her. She felt an affinity with the weathered bark as it reminded the girl of her own fragility. Time had passed since her youthful days. She had realized true friendships and found a special and lasting love. The oak tree in the girl's yard changes its last few leaves for tangerine and mango hues. She relishes all her senses. Solely in the present moment, she chooses to flourish herself inside like the living tree outside. End poem. Oh, this was beautiful, Senseless Beauty. I thought that it had a lot of sense to it, despite your username. The comparison between the girl and her stages in life and the tree that she took inspiration from. It's a really nice mirroring of what's going on. Very well done. One second. I see I have a caller, which is exciting. Okay, Pam will be joining us in just a moment. Yay for Pam. Woohoo! Welcome, Pam. When you're able, it says that you need a minute, but I'm very excited to have you here. Okay. So we did that one. And now...
Hey, baby.
Hey, Pam!
Hey, goodness.
Thank you for calling.
Goodness gracious. I did not realize you were left alone for nearly an hour. I thought, you know, I'm really sorry. I kept checking Speakeasy thinking there'd be a message if you wouldn't have Dexter.
The problem was that because I was talking the whole time and reading, I didn't have chance to do a message.
Oh, my goodness. I understand how that is. But I wanted to volunteer to read the next poem to give you a little bit of a break.
Oh, that would be nice. Catch my breath a little bit.
After I comment on that.
That's okay. So, you've just got here. You probably didn't hear the previous poem.
I did not. I wish I had, because I like the title, and I like poems that either write literally about trees or use trees as a metaphor. So I definitely will have to check it out when I get a chance.
For sure. Our next one is to the prompt, autumn leaves don't fall, they fly. They take their time and wander on this, their only chance to soar. So I'm going to put that up there for you on the board. I'm just going to grab a quick drink, and I'll be right back.
Sure, no problem. I'll read and go straight into commenting. So this is Their Time by Katrina, and it goes like this. Breakdown in Brooklyn, samba in Sicily, flash dance in Philly, in festive fall colors. As I sweep, they keep coming, eluding the broom, and I watch them fly off in the leaf liberation. It's their time to go crazy. End poem. Now that is a wonderful brevity. And I really love how she brings the movement of dance into this. And she doesn't just stick with generic, the word dance. It's specific kinds of dance related to their area, break dancing from Brooklyn, the samba from Sicily, which is also a nice alliteration. I did not know that the samba came from Sicily. I don't know, she just used it for the alliteration. Flash dance in Philly. That's a cool one. I've got visions of John Travolta in my head now, so very cool. And oh wait, no, he wasn't in Flash Dance. He was in Saturday Night Fever. Yeah, that was it. But still visions of John Travolta like silly plums in my head.
I'm picturing Kevin Bacon, but I could be totally wrong. No, he was Footloose.
Oh, you're right. It is Kevin Bacon. Yes. Yeah, that was, I enjoy that scene so much where his foot gets caught and they're doing the tractor chicken game. And I can't believe I forgot that's where that comes from, the movie Flashdance. But that, I think it was the Flashdance in Philly that threw me off, because I'm pretty sure Saturday Night Live takes place in Philadelphia or New York, some East city, and Flashdance takes place in a small town in like the Midwest. So, yeah, maybe she just creatively combined the two. But yeah, the wonderful brevity with the great use of movement and imagery, definitely beautifully written and very well done. But I apologize. I'll be right back.
Okay, thanks, Pam. So yeah, I thought this was a fun one as well. It's a brevity, so it's over a little too quickly. It just gives us a taste. But it is fun how she used the different locations to talk about the different ways that dancing can be different in different areas, as can the fall colors. And that can influence how you experience fall. You know, maybe the dancing is influenced by the area and what it looks like. You have different kind of spirit to your music depending on that. I'd also like the as I sweep, they keep coming, eluding the broom, because it's one of those things where if it's still falling down, you're just going to be there forever. I don't notice that as much with the falling leaves here, but for snow, I mean, by the time I'm done taking one pass at the driveway, it has fallen enough that the beginning of where I was is already full of snow again. So I understand that with a shovel, not a broom, but it can feel like a never-ending cycle. But I like how she writes leaf liberation. It's their time to go crazy. That's fun that the trees and the leaves get to just be wild for a little while. There's a freedom to that. And leaf liberation just sounds great. Thank you for sharing that, Katrina. I see Robbie on the board. Hello, Robbie. And let's go to... I'm going to read another one of mine. Now, this is called Fallen Leaf. Cheeks grew rosy with stunning fever before the pallor of winter exposed bare scalp on the right side like a birch in November. The left dances in the wind, bobbing curls, beautiful in comparison. That half smile mustered through the fog was treasured more than full grins that sprouted in the cloudless spring. What appears to be a downward plunge might just be a plié. As resilient spirits prepare to jeter, I was crunched underfoot, believed to be drained of life, but I held fast to the breeze and captured vibrancy. End poem. So a little background on that poem was it was about myself when I was ill and I had lost half of my hair when I was sick. So my left side was actually, I did this backwards in the poem. My right side I didn't do it backwards. I'm saying it backwards. My right side was bald. So I was just comparing that to a birch tree that had lost all of its foliage. And then my left side was dancing in the wind. The hair there was quite wild. But that half smile in the difficult time of the cold meant more than a full smile in the spring when I had both sides that were okay. And then I used some ballet language, not that I'm a dancer, but just for fun, where I said the downward plunge was a plié. That meant it was just one of those positions where you kind of fold down, but then you jeté, which is you jump up. So it wasn't down for the count. I was that leaf that kind of like flutters but works its way back up. I wasn't crunched underfoot. I was back into the breeze. So it was really meant to be a hopeful poem. Pam, I see you're back. Welcome back.
Yes, and wonderful read and write there. I like how you use the idea of the bear tree or the representation of yourself and what you went through with your losing your hair. And as I've always said before, you know, you're so good at sharing personal rights and experiences through your poetry. I liked that you decided to have fun with the ballet imagery and phrases, and I think it works really well because of the fact that the way trees stand with their branches up oftentimes look like poles ballet dancers. And I like what you had to say about your own poem where, you know, you mentioned the half smile was treasured, or you said in your poem that half smile mustered through the fog was treasured more than full grins that sprouted in cloudless spring. And that is so true for any one of us, or at least it should be. It should bring a realization that, you know, it's easy to have joy, happiness, personal strength and courage, those kind of attributes, when you're going through the cloudless spring days of life. It's when you're stumbling through the fog and it feels cold and lonely and dark, and it doesn't feel necessarily like there logically should be any hope, and yet you offer up that half smile knowing. And that smile takes more strength and more courage than to be able to smile during the sunny days. I also like the use of the word vibrancy. I think that's just a beautiful word that has a great energy to it. And so excellent, right, Faizy, and very well done. So do you need a couple more rights, or?
You know what? I could use some more because I only have two more. I sped through our list since I was by myself. There was no chatter or other people's comments. So, yes, if you have more, please do add.
All right. Will do. But in the meantime, I imagine you're getting the next poem up. Unless you, do you want to talk about, well, do you have any, like, upcoming shows or contests you'd like to talk about while I...
Sure. Yes. So tomorrow, Part Sinner, Part Saint, we are using Babbler's contests. And she has a few, and none of them, unfortunately, have had many entries. It seems like it's a bit of a lull as everyone's perhaps out enjoying their September. So let's go over her contests. We have Good Days is a contest that she has going, and that one is... tell me something about what makes your day instantly brighter, something that brings you a smile, whatever it may be. So it's a very open-ended contest about things that make you smile, and she has a couple of entries there. Her other contest is Red, so it's part of her rainbow series where she's going through different colors. And it says, I've been toying with the idea of a series of contests, decided to stop toying with it and give it a go. So it's a color theme series. And the first one is red. So she has a few quotes about the color red. And I will share some of those quotes so you can get inspired to start writing. The pure red of which certain abstractionists speak does not exist. Any red is rooted in blood, glass, wine, hunter's caps, and a thousand other concrete phenomena. Otherwise, we would have no feeling towards red and its relations. Robert Motherwell. And now she lies flat on her folded arms, face down, and towards the dust her red mouth leans, and it is full of silence, like all red things. A study in scarlet, eh? Why shouldn't we use a little art jargon? There's the scarlet thread of murder running through the colorless skein of life, and our duty is to unravel it and isolate it and expose every inch of it. Arthur Conan Doyle. The true color of life is the color of the body, the color of the covered red, the implicit and not explicit red of the living heart, and the pulses. It is the modest color of the unpublished blood. Alice Meynell. When I'm dead, I hope it may be said, his sins were scarlet, but his books were red. Hilaire Belloc. If one says red, the name of color, and there are 50 people listening, it can be expected there will be 50 reds in their mind, and one can be sure that all these reds will be very different. Joseph Albers. Red protects itself. No color is as territorial. It stakes a claim, is on the alert against the spectrum. Michael Derrick Elworthy. The pure red of which certain abstractions speak does not exist. I already read this quote. A thimbleful of red is redder than a bucketful. Henri Matisse. So she says you don't have to stick to those quotes, but those are to get you thinking about how to look at the color red in some interesting ways. And she has one more contest that's open. It's called There, There, and it is on the book There, There by Tommy Orange. So she has a list of quotes. And I'm not going to read them all off right now because they're quite lengthy. But check out the quotes in her There, There contest. And those are all some inspiring contests. And there's going to be kind of a mix of them on tomorrow night's show. Pam, are you back with me?
I am, yes. I'm just posting one more link. I put up four poems, which, of course, all four don't have to be read, or I am about to. There we go. And that way, if they're needed. And
wonderful.
Yeah. I like, you know, that same thing happens to me with contests where, you know, I'll think on an idea for quite a while and keep going back and forth and finally say, you know what, it's time to stop thinking and start doing. So, you know.
Yes.
I
know.
Me
too. I always have things in the back of my mind that, like, eventually I'll find the right song for that or the right, like, I have little piles of sticky notes everywhere because as I experience life, I'm like, that would be a contest. And then I have to decipher my notes later. Like, what did I want to do? Brilliant
yeah,
idea
right.
at the time,
I'm always,
sure.
I'm always bookmarking ideas. Sometimes I'll go back and decide that they're not an idea I want to do, but if I don't save them, like, just like you, I'll forget.
Mm-hmm. I put a link to a poem by Fill My Eyes. Could you give that a read, please, Pam?
Absolutely. I'd be happy to. I love Phil's poetry. All right. And this is Autumn's Love by Fill My Eyes. And it goes like this. Whirling, twirling towards the ground, colors drifting, raining down. Red and orange, gold and brown. Drifting, spinning, floating round. All the beauty showering me, fluttering so gracefully, softly falling from up above, wondrous colors, autumn's love. And poem.
Well, I really like that it starts with whirling. I just love the word whirling, and it creates such a clear image in my mind of that particular spinning of things in the wind. At my elementary school, there was this one corner outside, and something about just the way it was with the building, there was always like a mini, looks like a tornado, not a tornado, but like this gust of wind would happen in that little corner, and you could bring leaves or snow or whatever it was over to that corner and throw it in, and it would whirl and twirl, and you'd have like a beautiful little cyclone of color. So whenever I hear whirling, I imagine that little corner and making, you know, temporary art there, like making a little mobile of leaves, whirling, twirling. So that also has the internal rhyme going for it. Towards the ground, colors drifting, draining, raining down. I like the color choices, the red and orange and gold and brown, those classic fall colors. And that they're drifting, because they're not, you know, on a path as in a plane would be. They just kind of have their own way of gliding around and kind of like aimless and yet beautiful. So drifting, I think, is a good word choice there. And fluttering gracefully. So even though they're falling, there's still the way that it's falling is perfect. And also the beauty is showering her. And that's one of those things of when you look up and the leaves are falling around you, it truly feels like you're like immersed in that beauty. Wondrous colors, autumn's love, and it really does feel like a hug when you experience that beauty. So I really think that choosing love as the feeling here worked out nicely. What did you think, Pam?
You know, I have to agree with you. Hold on. Let me just... type something in real quick, and I am not capable of talking. And all that at the same time. But, you know, Jean has always wonderful rhyme and flow to her, like a great meter. You can really tell that it's a gift that she has. There we go. All right. So, first of all, personification. She has wonderful personification in this of autumn and the way that autumn shows its love through the dancing and through the beautiful and bright colors. I too liked her word choices where it had like whirling, twirling colors, you know, softly falling. I was reading quite a while back, and you might already know this, but that there's feminine rhyme and there's masculine rhyme. And this has a very, if I remember right, you know, feminine rhyme is a little softer. I think there's other things to it too. I can't remember exactly how it works, but I could be wrong, but there's something because of the gentle sounds used, like soft, the S sound and the WH sound and the SH sound, it has a very feminine feel to it. I really like all the beauty showering me, fluttering so gracefully, because that to me, I think, has to be the most fun part of the poem, because it brings you back to the idea of not only the leaves falling, but the person standing there, arms outstretched, you know, just enjoying the moment, taking in the moment of the leaves flowing, fluttering around them, showering down on them. And it seems that autumn is such a beautiful time of year, and the trees with all their foliage look so beautiful. But once they start falling off, it doesn't take long till they're completely bare. And so it's such a brief moment that you really have to learn to appreciate. So just absolutely a stunning write and very well done. I was glad to see that Phil put a couple of writes on the board. That was really cool.
Yes, me too. I was happy to see her entries. And more are coming in. Your call for extras have been heard. I have one from Naomi, one from Robbie, one from A.R. Mandel. So thank you, everyone, for spilling in with your wonderful poetry.
Awesome.
While you were talking, I looked up the masculine feminine rhyme thing because I was not familiar with it. And from what I can see, a masculine rhyme occurs when a single syllable at the end of the word, which is stressed, rhymed, and a feminine rhyme matches two or more syllables, with the last syllable being unstressed.
Okay. So this might actually be more masculine rhyme, but for some reason in my head, because of the gentler sound, it just sounded feminine. But, you know, that's cool. I wish I could retain information better, because, and I'm glad you looked that up. It was actually something I didn't even know until recently. Like, it's not something, like, you know how there's certain things in poetry that everybody talks about? Like, you barely know poetry and you know these things. But then there are some things where it's like I've been writing poetry for years, and I only just discovered this, like, a month or so ago, that there is this thing as masculine and feminine rhyme. So.
Oh, I love that we're continuously learning. I really do. That up, I found a website called Word Wool, and it's like about weaving words together to make poems, and I'm loving this. So thank you, Pam. Now I'm off on like a new adventure of learning more poetry facts.
Very cool.
Why don't you read us one of your poems, Pam? And then we'll alternate, because we have a few nice ones from you, so we'll do yours and then someone else's, and then yours and then someone else's, and get lots of Pam goodness in.
All right. Now, unfortunately, anything I had on Autumn wasn't necessarily personal, but, you know, so mine are kind of a modge podge. And this one is When I Am Old, and it goes like this. When I am old, I will dye my hair maroon and not give a damn if it stains the good towels. I will do my best to maintain an antisocial persona by frequently grumbling, glaring, and hitting people in the back of my legs with my shopping cart. I will sit in front of my apartment building with a six-pack of beer and a squirt gun that looks like a real Colt 45. I will listen to heavy metal, rock, and alternative music from between the 70s to early 2000s. I will call young people whippersnapper and occasionally throw beer cans at them. I will own two cats named Bukowski and Ginsburg, but I will forget their names the way I tried to forget every time my heart broke. So I will call them Dumb Shit 1 and Dumb Shit 2. And every time I look back on the foolishness of my youth, when I mistook everything that wasn't love for love, I will call myself Dumb Shit 3. Then in the evening, I will sit in a recliner next to an electric heater, reading a favorite book and a cup of tea, and daydream about the kind of kisses that smooth away time and wrinkles. End poem.
Oh, I love so much about this. I like trying to maintain an antisocial persona. I can picture myself like that. The squirt gun, I quite enjoy. I can imagine squirting people as they go by. it's funny how you're talking about the heavy metal and rock, because the idea of what is called like classic rock has changed so much. There's this whole thing of the stuff that I used to like when I was younger is now called dad rock, because it's like what the dads listen to now, and it kills me because it's like, I'm like, no, this is from like the late 90s and 2000s. And they're like, yeah, that's our dad's age. And I'm like, oh, okay. So, you know, the dad rock is what I'll be listening to. Cause I guess that's just, we get stuck in whatever was in our prime. And then Whippersnapper is highly underused, I have to say. Although, working at the information desk, I have been called a whippersnapper by some elderly patrons, I have to say. Not in a negative way, though. It's like, you're a whippersnapper. You can probably figure out my phone. Or like,
you
young whippersnapper. especially when I had my hair purple. People seem to think I was a lot younger than I am. Whippersnapper. Do the same. Anyway, I just like that term. Not necessarily when people are calling me it, but I like saying it. and throwing the beer cans at them. That'll be my dad in a few years, I think. my grandpa used to do it at the birds. He had certain birds that he really liked, and so he would put out bird seed for them. And then other birds, like seagulls, who he was less fond of, would come and take the stuff, and he'd be throwing his beer cans to scare them away so the good birds would get the seed. I mean, later on, it was Pepsi cans instead of beer because he wasn't allowed to have beer. But it was, whenever someone's throwing a beer can, I picture my grandpa. He's not a violent man, just fun. And then the dumb shit two and dumb shit three. That I can imagine my mother eventually doing because she can never remember anyone's name. it's getting worse now that she has grandkids because, like, she'll just name off all the things, you know. As she mixes me up with the dog, name-wise, which drives me crazy. I'm like, Mom, I'm clearly not a dog. And she's like, well, she's usually the one I'm yelling at now.
Oh, that's funny. It's funny, though, how you sound, it just, you know, like, it just comes out. You don't even think about it. It just like...
It would just be easier to call you dumb shit because then you don't know who you're talking about and they can't tease you for saying the wrong thing.
Yep. Yep. But,
Frank is scandalized that I swore. That's right, Frank. Dumb shit. He's like, did she just say? oh, he thought I said dump, not dumb. Okay.
Dump.
No. Dumb.
Oh, my gosh. Sometimes, I hate those when you call in. I was calling to replace my phone minutes, and I was trying to read off my debit card number, and I just have one of those. I don't know if it's my accent or the way I enunciate things, but those kind of machines that are supposed to record when you say yes or no or give them a list of numbers, they never understand me.
I was watching the show
so
only. Oh yeah, no, it was wonderful. On the show Only Murders in the Building, the one guy is hurt and he's trying to like get his phone to get him help, and he's like, Siri, call the police, and then it plays, it's like playing the police, and then it's like a song by the band The Police, and he's like, no, get the. It's time for the sting. And so she's like, playing sting. And he's like, no. anyway. Technology. All right. So here is a poem by Naomi Sarah. Thank you, Naomi. I see you there on the board. And here we go. The Weight by Naomi Sarah. The sun shimmers through rusty reds and orangey yellows as beds of leaves await the blanketed softness of snow. End poem. I like the shape of this, too, where it starts off with very short lines, swells up, and then goes down to short lines, so it looks like a leaf itself in the physical structure of the lines. There's a beauty for sure in this phase where the sun is still bright and bringing to life those bright leaves, but they're awaiting the softness of the snow. This is a nice transitional piece between seasons, and just a beautiful brevity. What did you think, Pam?
This is a beautiful brevity. You know, it wasn't until last night, for some reason, that I didn't realize how many brevities Naomi actually writes. Like, I guess it's because for like a lot of the contests she writes for me for like After Midnight, I see, and Twisted Tuesdays, I see some of her longer writes. But yeah, she's really good. Oh, she's great at everything she writes. But this is amazing to use only 19 words to express the beauty of autumn. And as you said, when you can only use 19 words, you know, you have to make things count. So not only does she make every word count, every image, but the fact that she shapes it to look like a leaf really adds to the depth of the poem. I really like the use of alliteration in here, and it's difficult to separate one line from another because it all works together beautifully. But I do like the sun shimmers through rusty reds and then await the blanketed softness of snow. So you realize that it's that time in autumn where, you know, the leaves are waiting because they know that any moment now they will be covered up by that blanket of snow. So absolutely a stunning brevity, you know, and I would call it a mega brevity. But I know what the funny thing is, I've heard the term mega brevity before, but I'm never sure if it's an exact like number, but then I'm never sure with brevity either. Like, you know, I've asked people before, what exactly is the number word limit for it to be considered brevity? And you'll hear various responses, but most will say like 100 or under. But anyways, this is just really beautiful and very well done.
I agree. I was trying to look up mega brevity, but there's no for sure, like, people seem to disagree about it.
Yeah, well, it makes sense because they can't even agree about brevity, so they're certainly never going to agree about mega brevity. I haven't heard any term that goes beyond that, though there could be. There could be, like, microscopic brevity or something.
Yeah, I was just thinking that, micro brevity.
Yeah.
They're like microbrewery. Microbrevity. There should be brevity poems on the labels of microbrewery beers. All right.
There you go. I like it. All right.
Could be a job.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, I like it.
All right, Pam, you're hired. Write some stuff for the bottles.
For the micro poetry or for micro breweries. That could actually,
yes.
We could contact some local micro breweries. Man, I'm getting tongue tied. And sell them that idea.
I think we could. It's doable.
Yeah. Isn't that, or along with all of our other, like, you know, baking, adult toy store, bookstore, all the stuff we have planned, we can add microbrewery onto it.
Well, you know, we could, because we were going to have a bar in that place. So, you know, we could serve the stuff from our microbrewery.
There you go. There you go. I like it. Yep.
Oh, Pam and I are going to have such an amazing retirement business. It's not going to be much of a retirement because we'll be working all the 10 things at once, but it'll be fun.
Oh, my gosh. All right. So I see you got one of mine up?
Yes.
All right.
Give it a read.
Sure. All right. Wastelands of worms and wings. Wastelands echoing. Screams of once upon a time shattering and scattered to the four winds. I covet stars in their silence, wishing I didn't remember the stench of sweat in the forearm of rancid cocoons where baby worms die in a spittle of shame, blaming no one but themselves for the wounds of moths that never learned the wings of trust. The soil is planted with rosemary and thyme, sold to the highest bidder, and a spree of crimes to the mind. Betrayal flaying the melancholy split of footsteps falling to the platter of a monster's bread savored and devoured. No more will tar cling to the bones of a past dug up, wiped clean by the shedding of tears. In the lyrics of a truth sinking and rising in the bile of karma, still seeped and seated in the peaking of white noise, to exploit the warehouse of hell brought to innocence reinvented, the viral pride of skeletons that hang themselves upon the Greek and prodded, the shaken core of a harvest foundation where slithered the slime, a veiled consumption of flesh seen and approved by those who protect their own, but never the bloom of an outsider, planted unwillingly beneath hypocrisy's seeds, to grow the stem bent to kiss the weight of a cross upon shoulders too young to bear the secrets told by the hiss of vipers and the nest called the home walked away from. End poem.
Oh, there is so much depth to this. I really liked, for the wounds of moss that never learned the wings of trust. And without having trust, you can't learn to fly. Where is it now? No more will tar cling to the bones of a past dug up, wiped clean by the shedding of tears. That is an intense stanza right there. The bones of the past wiped clean by tears. Wow. And then at the end there, by the hiss of vipers in the nest called the home, this is dark and twisted in a beautiful way. Really intense imagery and thoughts. Thank you for sharing that.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. A wonderful, wonderful comment there.
I'm going to do one by Robbie now, who's here with us on the board. And it's called Seasons by Robbie's Poetry. Crystal tears of winter fall from her eyes as frosted lips breathe frost into the world. Cold winds issue from her sighs. The snows of winter become unfurled. Then as spring comes, her tears, they turn liquid and green, and her breath warms to soft frosts. Her signs now bring the sound of spring birds serene, as Mother Nature no longer upon the world with cold accosts. As summer issues forth from tears, now clear water blue, her warm breath brings hot summer days of joyful play. Her sings are now of moist morning dew, and Mother Nature allows the sun to bless the world with a long day. As fall comes, Mother Nature's tears are multi-hued, like the leaves, and her lips start to frost again, issuing forth a touch of ice. Cooler winds are now her songs, as the world starts to return to winter's cold heaves, and the snow and cold winds are soon to come to the world, and again through the air slice. Thus, this cycle repeats in infinite repetition, showing Mother Nature's caring and yet pernicious position. End poem. Pernicious. I said that word wrong there at the end. I'm sorry, Robbie. That caught me off guard. I really liked the way that this explored all of the seasons. And there's kind of a mix of melancholy and joy in all of them. Like, you know, winter starts off in tears, and there are sighs, but her breath warms everything. I like that it's personified with Mother Nature. You know, that's such a beautiful motif of nature being connected to a woman. And I think through many cultures, there's that vision of her. I kind of picture in the movie, the Disney movie Moana, I can't remember her name now, the Hawaiian goddess, but she's like this beautiful mountain that comes alive and is all of nature and gorgeous, and that's kind of how I picture it. But she's allowing the sun to do it, and her tears are multi-hued like the leaves. Some really great word choices here as it brings it to life, and great vocabulary, even if I slip up on the $5 words. Pam, what were your thoughts?
Well, I thought that was a wonderful read. You know, and to miss one $5 word and barely, I mean, you know, on a cold read, it happens to the best of us. And you are definitely, when it comes to reading, one of the best of us. And, you know, this is just wonderful personification of nature, that look at Mother Nature and the tears that she cries, and the way her tears are about expressing her grief, but also about the idea of cleansing. I really like the transition into spring. Then as spring comes, her tears, they turn liquid and green as her breath warms to soft frost. You know, there's something very tender, almost romantic and sensual in the idea of Mother Nature's warm breath softening the frost. You know, I also really like where it says, as it describes the back to winter, cooler winds are now news, her songs, as the world starts to return to winter's cold yet heaves. The snow and the cold winds are soon to come to the world, and again, the air slice. What a wonderful use of the word slice. And I like that it's just left there by its own. It's not slices or sliced and then something added into it. It's so abrupt that it works. It works because that's how it sometimes feels when all of a sudden winter hits. It feels abrupt. It feels cold. It feels silent and, you know, like there's just nothing else to do but just take in the pain and the loneliness of winter. So just a wonderful write all the way through and very well done.
Great comment, Pam. I'm putting you on the spot again with one of your poems.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, well, this one is not a personal write, but it fits kind of with the theme. And it was actually, shoot, I wish I had put in my AN. Oh, here we go. It will stay in the contest. Okay, this was my first and only attempt at doing a rhyming hexaverse, and so what the heck, I'll share it. All right, and it goes like this. Leaves painted in autumn colors, the sun begins its descent. Cool breeze begins to flow, a gentle salmon glow. Trees holding fruit heavy bent, butterfly wings whispered, flutters. Chestnut hair hangs to her shoulders, eyes a shade of penny spent, stands outside quaint chateau, valley stretched down below, her heart sighs with discontent, pining for her absent lover, sips on wine of noir and flower, from her thoughts she'll not repent, kisses that he'll bestow to the depths of her soul, beautiful this sweet torment, holding her within its power. As the sun sets, she'll not cower or cry. As the sun sets, she'll not cower or cry tears of a lament. Time passes, love does go, and its dead wisdom grows. Every good thing is not meant to flourish within every hour. Until his phantom touch does hold her, climbs her flesh like vine to bower, a foolish heart bound by vower. End poem.
Beautiful read and poem. I like the line, eyes a shade of pennies spent. You have some really great descriptions here. You know, it's not just brown, it's chestnut. It's the pennies, it's and you don't just say castle, you say quaint chateau. There's some really nice word choices. As the sun sets, she'll not cower. You know, she's not afraid of the dark here. And my favorite part is every good thing is not meant to flourish within every hour. You know, everything has its season, its time. Not everything's going to be beautiful at all times. It's not all going to happen on the time that we mind that we want it to. And then the picture that you had here with it, I mean, the poem stands alone, but when I look at that picture and I think about the poem, when you're talking about the butterfly wings whispered and fluttered, she has this shirt on that kind of like hangs down, and I can see that as like almost like her wings that could flutter in the wind, and the way that you describe her hair. It's just beautiful descriptions.
Thank you.
So I need
very
to welcome.
Much.
You're welcome. Naomi has called in. Welcome, Naomi.
Hi,
hey,
Naomi.
Hello. I'm
I
late
should have saved your
here.
Poem.
Oh, no. Well, I put another one up in case there, just in case you need it. So, just in case you need it. But good to be with you, girl. And what an awesome poem from Sam. Wow.
Yes, yes. Would you like to comment on it?
Yeah, what pleasure. I mean, leaves painted in autumn colors. You know, there's such a subtle sensuality to this whole piece that I just love. You know, I just feel it, you know, in the rich colors and the description of the lady there, her chestnut hair hangs to her shoulders, eyes a shade of pennies spent, which is amazing, like you've already said, Ephesiana. But that's just amazing, you know, pennies spent. And, you know, all the, like you said, you know, the different tones that she takes, like the salmon glow, you know, the chestnut, you know, all those different colors throughout. But, you know, yeah, I find this really, you know, still his phantom touch. Whoops, where did my computer go? Oh, no. Okay, it's back. Still his phantom touch does hold her, climb her flesh like vine to bower, a foolish heart bound by vower. You know, so just an amazing right all through. As the sun sets, she'll not cower or cry tears of a lament. Time passes, love does go, and its dead wisdom grows. So, you know, a very empowering poem too, you know, to the women. So very amazing right here, Pam, as always. just revel in this piece.
Thank you, Naomi.
Well said, Naomi. Okay. Whoops. What it is, what it is. All right. So our next poem is by Opti. And I will read that, and then we're going to get Naomi to read hers next after that. Autumn is what it is, by Opti. Autumn falls, leaves descend, beauty and the beast lives end, worlds cease, a show. Autumn becomes falling leaves, mystical colors and bare trees, a transition of state, young to old, a life to leave, nothing left to hold. Autumn is what autumn is, beautiful and bold. And poem. Well, I thought that had a really nice cadence to it and rhyme. It has kind of a subtle flow to it that works really nicely. And it's talking about a transitional state as between seasons. So I think that the way that it flows works really well. As it flows from line to line, the seasons flow from season to season. Naomi, what did you think?
Well, you know, what struck me was the metaphor of beauty and the beast, because, you know, of course, I think the beast being that winter is coming in, and the beauty is the beauty of the autumn, of the leaves and, you know, the colors and everything that autumn is, you know, it's so beautiful. So Beauty and the Beast, I really like that, you know, very creative and very unique that he put that in there. Beauty and the Beast, lives end or lives end, world cease, you know, a show, autumn becoming falling leaves, mystical colors and bare trees. And, you know, there is something mystical about all these colors and the bare leaves. And, you know, you in autumn, you picture, you know, the witches, the girls dancing, or the witches dancing, and there's something mystical. You know, it's the time for the recult and the dances, and Halloween, of course, that's coming. So there's all this, you know, this ceremony around autumn and these memories and this folklore, I think, and this, mysticism around the time of autumn. So wonderful right here. Bravo.
Agreed. Pam, what were your thoughts?
Yeah, I really like how there was kind of this sing-song quality to the rhyme, and it did put the idea of the visions of the leaves dancing around outside, and I did like the part where it talked about the transition of the seasons. And I like what Naomi had to say about the use of the word mystical, because it really is just so beautiful and so magical a time of the year. So excellent brevity and very well done.
Agreed. Naomi, I've put your poem up on the board, Autumn Rain, if you're willing to read that for us.
Yeah, another brevity. Autumn rain. Autumn raindrops drum upon shimmers of sunlight to the delicate beat of rainbowed umbrellas dancing on glistening sidewalks. End poem.
That was a lovely brevity. I like the use of drum for raindrops, because it really can sound like a drum. I find especially at work, we have this glass ceiling in certain parts, and you can really, like, it's like someone's playing the drum above us. And shimmers of sunlight. You know, people don't often associate rain with sun, but it can really be beautiful when they're combined. And the rainbow umbrella, I like how you have it incorporated in your poem and in the image there. Rainbowed umbrellas dancing on glistening sidewalks. And in the image, for those of you who can't see, the colors of the umbrella are dripping onto the ground. And that reminds me of the fall leaves spilling their colors onto the ground. I think that's a really beautiful concept, and you bring it to life in your poem. Pam, would you like to comment?
Yeah, this is another amazing brevity, and I love how you bring the scene to life by not only using imagery like shimmers of sunlight, which is great alliteration, but you have sound with the word drum, as Afaziana, you brought up, the drumming of the raindrops against the umbrella, and, and movement too, dancing on glistening sidewalks. You really bring everything to life. This is like one of those poems that's a snapshot. And I like how the rainbow, I like you bring in the rainbowed umbrella, the idea of somebody who just sees the joy in life, even in the rainy days. So excellent, Naomi, and very well done.
Thank you, Pam.
Pam, would you please read Autumn Spring by R. Mundell?
I would be happy to. All right. And Autumn Spring by A.R. Mundell. Ruby petals stain the lane and pepper tallest trees. Blossoms fill the branches still wet with raindrop sheen. Veiny flowers frolic free upon their rest. Coral corollas cling to life on wooden russet stems. Auburns mix with mustard gold and blooms of tawny hues, the bottom of the rainbow rebirthed to life anew. End poem.
Well read. Thank you. Naomi, would you like to start the comments?
Oh, yeah. I just love like the use of color and throughout this poem, you know, from the ruby petals to the pepper trees there, the sheen of the raindrops, the coral corollas and the russet streams, the auburn mix, the mustard gold, the tawny hues, and I love that last stanza, the bottom of the rainbow, rebirth to life anew. And, you know, it is like a bottom of the rainbow, all these colors bursting into, you know, like one of your prompts, Afaziana, it's like, autumn is like the branches blooming, you know, like in spring, they're blooming into life because they're all their colors. So in a way, it is like, as if you're entering the bottom of the rainbow within all these amazing, amazing colors. So, wow, what an amazing, amazing poem here by I.R. Mundell. Just fabulous stanzas, one after the other. Amazing.
I agree. I love that opening stanza. Ruby petals stain the lane and pepper the tallest trees. Such a good way of putting it. And then describing the flowers as veiny. You know, it's not something you necessarily think about, but it's so true. When you're looking very closely, they have those veins that the water goes through. In fact, when I'm doing art projects with kids and we're looking at the leaves, that's something that they tend to really emphasize as they're copying those lines within the leaves, emphasizing those veins. I like the choice of colors, mustard, you know, tawny, the coral. Choosing to go with the not just simple red and yellow, but to choose specific shades of it. And then that bottom of the rainbow reburst is absolutely a beautiful way of expressing this. Pam, what were your thoughts?
Well, as always, she has just wonderful metered rhyme to this. I like the alliteration within here, like blossoms fill the branches, and you know the coral corollas clean. I also like, as you said, the idea that she used the colors, the autumn colors, but a little different shades, like the mustard gold. You know, I liked that. That was very cool. It was a great take on the chosen prompt, autumn is a second, when every leaf is a flower. And she really shows us the way that the petals, the leaves themselves blossom and the lines that come through to them. Real great attention to detail. Beautifully written and very well done.
I agree. So I think we're going to have time for one more poem. This is from Poetic Picasso, also known as Frank. Days of Autumn by Poetic Picasso. By the Brunius Pier, a cobalt boat is fastened, so small and so solitary as a haunting reminder. A time when a man spent his morning sunshine alone under the dry lemon leaves and the brittle topaz branches. The leaves fall gradually upon the gentle ripples of tiny shades of yellow within the marigold river. If he stares into the water, he would see the reflection of his face and its sorrow. With buttercups he throws. Thus the days of autumn are accompanied suddenly by the daffodil color alive upon the fresh new ripples, the color of a new hope. And poem. Pam, can you start comments on that one?
Oh, I would be happy to. This is absolutely stunning. You know, Frank is so good when he writes dark and he writes sensual, but then you get to see different sides of him and you realize how absolutely versatile he is. Here he captures the peace, the gentleness of autumn, the way it's a very, what I like to call a meditative rite. And there is a sadness to it, you know, like when it mentions the cobalt boat is fastened so small and so solitary as a haunting reminder. It's almost like you could imagine somebody looking at that boat and realizing, you know, how lonely they are. I also like that he too went with, you know, like he describes the yellow leaves. It's not just yellow, but dry lemon leaves. Thus the days of autumn are accompanied suddenly by the daffodil color alive upon the fresh new ripples, the color of a new hope. And I think that's so important for us to have is hope. And I like how this poem represents that with the beautiful use of the color, the different yellows, and the brightness of the sun. So excellent write and very well done.
I agree. I also enjoyed the many yellows, the lemon and marigold, buttercup and daffodil, all nature's yellows that have their own special hues. And I like that it ends up going into hope in the last line. I also like the word Brunius in the first line. You know, it starts off with a cool vocabulary, and I think that kind of sets a tone for it. Naomi, what were your thoughts?
Oh, yeah, you know, wow. Wow, 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 Frank, you never cease to amaze me. Like Pam said, you know, you write sensual so amazingly, and you write dark, you know, so profound and so seizing. But here you capture nature in such a, you know, a beautiful, soft, almost melancholic way, but you know, with a message, a beautiful message at the end, the color of a new hope. But you know, I've sensed the melancholy and kind of like a nostalgia throughout the poem here. You know, and it's so great to have to read a poem, and you know, to feel an emotion. You know, that's what poetry is all about, when it makes you feel an emotion. And here Frank succeeds so well in getting that emotion across. So bravo, Frank. I mean, the imagery, everything is just the flow of the whole piece. It just comes together in a stunning right here. So you know, just amazing, stunning right here from Frank.
I agree. Now, we're all out of time, but I have to say I'm so grateful to Pam and Naomi, to everyone on the board, for keeping me company for that second hour. You know, the first hour I did enjoy all the poetry, but hearing other people's perspective on it and having a breath between poems is absolutely wonderful. So thank you so much, Pam and Naomi, and everyone who came in to comment. And thank you to everyone who submitted to the show. Pam has another show coming up in half an hour, and then tomorrow I have a show with Babbler after Fill My Eyes' Open Poetry. So stay tuned. We have at least one show, often two, every night on Late Night Poets.
Hi.